Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence, the show that explores the possibility that ancient civilizations may have been correct in their belief that history moves in a great cycle with high ages of enlightenment and low ages of darkness. My name is Walter Cruttenden, and I'm here along with co-host Jeff Pitino, and we'll be exploring some of the myth, folklore, archaeology, and astronomy of cyclical theory and examine its cause, including stellar influences. Both Jeff and I work here at the Binary Research Institute in Newport Beach. We are an archaeoastronomy think tank, and it's here that we've spent the last few years researching the binary theory, which is basically the idea that our solar system goes around another star, and this produces the observable known as the precession of the equinox, while also indirectly causing the rise and fall of civilizations.
Hi, and I'm Jeff Pitino, and thanks again for joining us. If at any point during the show you'd like more information on the Binary Research Institute or Walter's book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, or any of the topics that we discuss on the show, please visit us on our website, loststarbook.com. Walter, today I think we're both honored to be joined by a guest who's an international best-selling author, Graham Hancock.
Yes, Graham's been an inspiration to me for many, many years. He is the author of the best-selling book, Fingerprint of the Gods, Fingerprints of the Gods, and it's this book that had a huge impact on this whole movement of alternative history, because he went all around the world and explored ancient sites and found that ancient cultures seemed to be much older than anybody expected. And so it just begged the question, why?
Exactly. Fingerprints is one of the most fascinating books I've ever read. He presents so much evidence showing that ancient cultures are older than we think they are, and really tying in mythology and astronomy with a lot of the things that we see as in terms of ruins, especially with the Great Pyramids. He even goes into talking about how the Egyptians seemed to get worse at building pyramids as time went on rather than better, which is kind of counterintuitive. And I think in a lot of cases ties in with the idea that we're researching, this idea that a lot of cultures had of the Great Year.
Yes, and so this parallels the work of John Anthony West, who we had on our last show, and John Major Jenkins and others that have really explored this idea that all around the world there exists evidence of an advanced culture that disappeared, thousands of years before the Dark Age.
Exactly, and some of his more recent works have explored this idea as well. This idea of ancient cultures and being older than we thought, and civilization being older than we thought, and possibly even tying into the rise and fall of civilization. I think Underworld is really fascinating, where he went around the world diving under the oceans looking for ancient ruins, because we know the sea level has risen about 60 meters in the last 15,000 years.
Yes, this is a book. It's 700 pages. I read every page. I just loved it. And I think the main focus is on Yanaguni off Japan. But he also dives off of Malta and India and even Taiwan, and in all these places he's finding evidence anywhere from a few meters to 20, 40, 50 meters below the ocean surface that there appears to be man-made structures, or at least man-altered structures. And so this gives us some idea of the date that these structures might have been built, because the seas didn't rise until the ice age really started going away and the Great Ice Cap melted. And so this is probably dating 8,000-10,000 years ago, something like that.
Exactly. And I think we should mention to our listeners that Graham will also be presenting at the CPAC 2006 conference, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge that we host every year. This year it's going to be at UCI. And in addition to Graham, we've got a number of other fantastic speakers.
Yes. Let's see. Who do we have? We have Jeff Marcy. He's probably the number one astronomer in the world. Currently head of astronomy for UC Berkeley, and known as the guy that has found more extra solar planets than anybody else on any other astronomer or astrophysicist. Also, Claude Swenson, a PhD in physics out of Princeton and MIT.
John Anthony West, Robert Schock, physicist John Daring, who gave a fantastic presentation last year.
So they'll all be there. What are the dates again, Jeff?
The dates are October 14th and 15th, 2006 at UCI. You can get more information at the website cpaconline.com. And you're listening to The Cosmic Influence. We will be back in just a moment with Graham Hancock.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
And welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm your host, Walter Cruttenden. I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino. And once again, we have a special guest with us today, author Graham Hancock, author of Fingerprints of the Gods, as well as Underworld and Supernatural and a number of other books that all total, I think they've sold something like 5 million copies. And Graham has really been one of the stalwart leaders here in this whole fresh look at ancient cultures around the world to better understand what they were doing.
And hi, this is Jeff Pitino again. Just a reminder, if at any point you want more information of what we're discussing on the show or Walter's book or the Binary Research Institute, please visit our website, loststarbook.com.
And speaking of websites, I've spent a fair amount of time on Graham Hancock's website, especially one of the message boards called The Mysteries. And it's really become the go-to place for people that are interested in ancient cultures and the latest news. And so if you get a chance, you just Google Graham Hancock, and I think he pops up first there, his site.
And I believe the website is actually grahamhancock.com.
Great, great. So without further ado, we'll see if Graham's on the line. Graham, you there?
Yes, I'm with you. Hi.
Good. Well, welcome to Cosmic Influence.
Thank you, and thanks for the nice words about my books and about the website. Yeah, I'm glad that the website is attracting a big international community, and people are still, you know, talking energetically about these important issues.
Yeah, it's become a hit. You know, there's so many interesting news announcements lately that I tend to actually go to your site to kind of see what people's take on the news is.
Yes.
When it has to do with these things. But I haven't been there in a week or so since this new one hit on ancient dentistry. Are you familiar with that? Did you see that article?
Yeah, I'm familiar. I'm familiar with that story, and it seems high precision dentistry was going on about 9,000 years ago.
I know it's astounding, and I just can't believe the idea that they could drill the back molars with flint bits and a bow.
Exactly. quite extraordinary. And also, then you have to think about the level of medical science that underlies this. I mean, they weren't just drilling holes. They were doing this, you know, for a reason, to deal with cavities. And, you know, so once again, we have an issue of much higher knowledge than we expected being evidenced at a much earlier time than we expected.
I agree. Plus, you know, if we can drill something, you know, and one dentist looked at this and said, you know, these are really precision drilled holes. And we do this supposedly 4,000 or 5,000 years before we have the wheel.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. It tells us, it's one of the many hints and clues that there is something seriously wrong with the picture of history and prehistory as it's presented to us in the schools and in the universities, and unfortunately mainly on the media too.
Yeah, and well, I mean, ultimately, even with everything that archaeologists have found, they're still just little pieces, so it's almost like trying to look at a jigsaw puzzle and determine what the picture is.
Exactly. In fact, that's a very important point that you're making, because archaeologists often present themselves as though they actually are in possession of all the knowledge about the past, and anybody who disagrees with them must therefore be crazy. But in fact, when you look at the situation, even on thoroughly explored and excavated sites like Tiwanaku in Bolivia, the archaeologists have, in fact, excavated less than 2% of the whole site.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that little.
Less than 2%, and that's very typical of sites. So actually, 98% of the site remains unexcavated, and all their pronouncements about the age of the site are based on what they happened upon in that 2%.
Yes.
And this is repeated all over the world, and when you consider what a small fraction of the Earth's surface is actually covered by recognized archaeological sites, and then you realize that only 2% of those areas have actually been touched, we're dealing with almost nothing knowledge base on which these pronouncements of archaeologists are made.
Yeah. Well, I guess the good side of development then that's going on all around the world at a ever-increasing pace due to the expanding population is that we are finding more and more of these sites. I read they just found a massive hoard of coins in China the other day, and just
that's right.
It was only a few weeks before that that they'd found, I guess, one of the largest astronomical sites. One of these round stone.
Indeed, so more and more is coming into view. But again, you know, we have to deal with a paradigm which refuses to accept that there could have been a higher level of civilization at a much earlier time. And that paradigm infiltrates the way people look at things, so that artifacts may be staring us in the face which speak of an older civilization and we fail to recognize them.
Yes. Well, Graham, just to back up a little bit, I think I read that you were a writer with The Economist. It's a magazine.
That's true, yeah.
And how the heck did you get then into ancient civilizations?
Well, it happened this way. During the 70s and first part of the 80s, I was a journalist and I was a foreign correspondent, and that's how I made my living. My last official role was as the East Africa correspondent for The Economist, and The Economist is a very prestigious business and political magazine published out of Britain, but with a large international reach. And they based me in Nairobi in Kenya, and I covered the whole of the East African area for them. And it was actually while I was doing that work as a journalist, Ethiopia was regularly on my beat. I had to go there often to report the news. And while going there, I stumbled across this extraordinary story that Ethiopia claims to possess the lost Ark of the Covenant. And obviously that attracted my attention as a story. And it wasn't a news story, but it was something that I began to look into in the background. And as I moved out of journalism and into books, which I did during the 1980s, it gradually became clear to me that there was a wonderful, wonderful investigation to do into the Ethiopian claim. And that eventually ended up as being my book, The Sign and the Seal, which was published in 1992. So it was really coming across this intriguing tradition and finally realizing that it had to be dealt with at book length that led me out of journalism and into writing books of the kind that I write now. And, of course, when I was researching The Sign and the Seal, the story has a substantial Ethiopian component, but it also is part of it unfolds in Israel, and a large part of it unfolds in Egypt, which, of course, is where Moses was, the key figure associated with the Ark. And it was that exposure to Egypt during that investigation and the extraordinary mystery of the pyramids of Egypt and of the gigantic megalithic constructions that piqued my curiosity and led me in the direction that eventually resulted in Fingerprints of the Gods.
It was just a huge seller, and one that really inspired me. And I think I'd mentioned it in my very first email to you that after I read that, I really felt somewhat justified in the work that I had been doing, you know, to find a cause for the rise and fall of civilization, because you had laid out so much evidence.
Well, thank you for that, and you know, absolutely, to return the compliment, the work that you have done really does, for the first time, offer us the hope of making sense of these huge cycles that seem to operate in human affairs, and why it would be that civilizations might rise and fall. That's something we just had to take as a given or as a mystery before, but now we have a way of understanding why that might happen, and that's really, really important.
Well, I sure hope we can make sense of it, because it really changes the way we view history. You know, there's a remake of Moses on television right now, which my wife and I were watching last night. And,
right.
And, of course, our current view is that these were extremely primitive times, and so they showed everyone this drab clothing and these horrible circumstances. And I was struck that I'd been reading about this tremendous find in Jaraft, Iran,
mm-hmm.
where they found all these fabrics that had been you know, almost hermetically sealed, because some of these rooms had collapsed.
Yes.
And these fabrics show these beautiful, beautiful patterns and colors that, you know, we thought these designs didn't come out until, you know, 100 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, we have been schooled with a rather blinkered view of the past, unfortunately, by our academics, who themselves are often very committed to a linear view of history and the notion that we ourselves are the absolute pinnacle of everything that human beings can achieve. And it does really require a kind of mental shift of gears in order to consider other possibilities, even when the evidence is staring us in the face.
Graham, I know in Fingerprints of the Gods, which to me was an extremely inspiring book as well, you made a really compelling case for civilizations being older than mainstream archaeologists and anthropologists suggest. And others like Schock and Vauval have also noted this.
Let me just pick that particular point up, mm-hmm. and to make it clear that one of the reasons that Fingerprints of the Gods worked and gelled with the public was because it came out at a time when a whole raft of new discoveries and new inquiries were being made, and I very much want to pay tribute to the key figures in those discoveries, and that is John Anthony West and Robert Schock with relation to the Sphinx, and Robert Vauval with his extraordinary star correlation work with relation to the pyramids, and again, of course, the Sphinx. If all this work hadn't been going on, if real discoveries were not being made at that time, then you know, there wouldn't have been nearly so much to say and to report on. But it was a time when things were really moving ahead, and I hope we'll see such a time again.
Which discoveries and what evidence, when you were putting together Fingerprints, did you find most compelling?
Well, first of all, as I've already mentioned, Robert Vauval's breakthrough on the Orion correlation with the pyramids and the possibility of using the stars and star alignments and star positions to suggest a much older date for the site. The geological work on the Sphinx is of incredible importance, and that importance has not diminished despite more than a decade of really acerbic academic criticism. Robert Schock's evidence still stands and has not been seriously challenged. I do feel as well, and I drew extensive attention to this in Fingerprints of the Gods, and then later in further detail in Underworld, this question of ancient maps, which show us the world not as it looked when those maps were supposedly drawn, but as it looked at the end of the last ice age, is very intriguing. And in each case, when we examine these mysterious maps, we find that they are copied from older source maps which have disappeared. So we may have a map that was copied in the 15th century, but the source map on which it is based has not come down to us, and yet that map shows the world as it looked 10 or 12,000 years ago, and this suggests that the source maps may actually have been drawn up at that time. And if that is so, then we're dealing not only with a civilization, but a civilization that was capable of exploring the world and mapping it with astonishing precision and detail. And the more I've looked into this mystery of the maps over the years, the more substance there comes to it, and we find maps from all over the world, even one that I'm I find particularly intriguing from Xi'an in China, drawn in the 1100s, again based on an older source map, which shows us the East China coast and the Korean coast as the, exactly as they looked about 13,000 years ago.
Yeah, I saw mention of that in Underworld. And,
yeah.
And Hapgood certainly set off a little revolution there when he
did, with his wonderful maps of the ancient sea kings. And really what proves that his hypothesis is correct is that he was just beginning, that there are many, 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 many more maps which Hapgood didn't get to, which bear out his central thesis that we are looking at the work of a lost civilization that mapped the Earth. So, you know, these kinds of discoveries were very important to me in putting Fingerprints of the Gods together. Also, the sheer burden of hard astronomical information that we find encoded in myths, it's as though the storytellers deliberately set out to create memorable stories that would be passed down from generation to generation because they are memorable. It was not necessary for those who were passing them down to understand them, but as long as they passed them down truly, then the scientific and technological information contained within the myths would survive. And again, I demonstrated at some length that encoded in the myths are extraordinary details about this phenomenon that astronomers call precession of the equinoxes, but that could equally well be caused, as you've shown, Walter, by a binary orbit for our
relationship
around another star.
Exactly. Well, hopefully we can talk about more the myths, the folklore, and the binary star relationship after we come back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with co-host Jeff Pitino and our special guest, Graham Hancock. We'll be right back.
If you are interested in the topics discussed on today's show, you'll want to see Walter Cruttenden's award-winning film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. Why do civilizations fall and rise again? What did the ancients say about the cycle of the ages? The Great Year explores the possibility that the rise and fall of human culture might be related to our sun's motion around a companion star. Find out more about the celestial mechanics that bring higher ages of enlightenment and learn where we are today in this grand cycle of time. It's a message of hope and inspiration and answers many questions about the greatest enigmas of human history. Order the DVD today at thegreatyear.com. That's www.thegreatyear.com. www.thegreatyear.com.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with co-host Jeff Pitino. and our special guest today, Graham Hancock. Graham, we were talking about some of the mythology, and Jeff, you mentioned one that struck you.
Yeah, just to turn back a little bit, Graham, you had mentioned Robert Bovall and his idea of the Great Pyramids aligning with the constellation Orion, and there was a layout that you and he had in your book. I believe it was Mystery of the Sphinx.
Yes, indeed.
That showed these alignments. If you turn back the processional clock,
yeah,
and showing Orion lined up with the pyramids and the Sphinx lined up with Leo.
Yeah, well, this is the wonderful thing about high-powered computer software. It brings a fantastic research tool right to our desktops, and it's possible to do things with that software that our predecessors, even a decade or two decades ago, could never have done. Now let's not get for the moment, and I'm sure we will shortly, into the issue of what does or doesn't cause the phenomenon that astronomers call precession. But that this phenomenon results in a change of the positions of the stars at particular times of year as they are viewed from the Earth. Whatever causes it, that is not in doubt. And it's that changing of the positions of the stars that we can now simulate on computers. And it's very, very striking. First of all, if you look at ancient Egyptian mythology, you will find repeated and insistent references to a golden age that they called Zeptepi, the first time. It means literally the first time. They're casting their minds back thousands of years into the past to this time when the gods literally walked on Earth. And Robert and I believe that that time can be astronomically determined in relation to the monuments on the ground, because it's a fact that if you take the three great pyramids of Giza, you will find that in any epoch, as Robert Bovall has shown and was the first to notice, that the layout of those three pyramids very closely matches the pattern of the three prominent stars in the belt of Orion. But as you shift back through time, you find that this match gets better and better. And where it becomes near perfect is during the period roughly 12,500 to 13,500 years ago, 10,500 to 11,500 BC. That's roughly the time frame. And weirdly enough, in exactly that time frame, at exactly the moment when the stars of Orion's belt line up with the layout of the pyramids, we find the constellation of Leo rising in the east in precisely the pattern that we would wish for it to line up with the Great Sphinx. So it's as though they've taken these two prominent asterisms, Leo and Orion, and modeled them on the ground as they looked in 10,500 BC. And what the third factor in this, which just as far as I'm concerned removes any doubt from it, is that it is in that time and only in that time that the Milky Way is seen to run due north-south overhead, matching the position of the Nile on the ground.
And the idea of the celestial Nile really permeates a lot of Egyptian mythology.
The winding waterway, it permeates the whole of Egyptian mythology. So we have a superb fit between monuments, mythology, and astronomy. Those three pegs together really nail this down, as far as I'm concerned, and present us with a picture of the sky as it looked in 10,500 BC and for 1,000 years before that, and model that picture on the ground in unmistakable ways.
And as Giorgio Santayana and Hertha von Deschen have pointed out in their book, Hamlet's Mill, it wasn't just the Egyptians, too, that were noticing this reference to a much higher time.
No, definitely not. What remains to be discovered, and again, unfortunately, this is an issue that archaeologists more or less just refuse to look into, is in how many ancient cultures were attempts made to model the stars on the ground. For example, the city of Utatlan in Guatemala turns out to be a Mayan city, turns out to be another one that is modeled on the constellation of Orion. Very, very mysterious to find this happening there. We know in China that certain tombs are laid out in the pattern of asterisms in the sky. But really what's needed is much more research to establish how often this particular idea found itself expressed in architecture. I'm sure it was much more often than in the places we've discovered already. But beyond that, all over the world, in virtually every culture of the world, there are myths that incorporate specific numbers, and those numbers turn out to be related, very closely related, to the phenomenon that we call the precession of the equinoxes, and the key numbers of that phenomenon, that you get a 1 degree change every 72 years. It's astonishing how often the number 72 and multiples of the number 72 turn up in ancient mythologies in contexts that leave us in little doubt that we're dealing with some kind of sky observation and sky religion here.
Yeah, it really is. And this whole idea of as above, so below, we're finding it seems to be a hot topic on the internet today. More and more people are looking at ancient structures. I read one article, and I can't remember the name of the researcher, but he had looked at over 2,000 tombs and megalithic structures and found that virtually all of those built before the year 1500 BC had some alignment with cardinal points or key stars.
Yes.
Or perhaps the solstices.
Yes.
And versus, you know, those after about 1000 BC to the AD period, they start going away, and you lose these alignments.
Yeah, it's as though the knowledge and the motivation got lost at the same time. That there was an ancient grand scheme connecting earth and sky, and that somehow along the way, with the passage of history, the breakdown of human knowledge, this idea got lost, and it's down to us in our time to rediscover it and make it manifest again.
Well, we've got a few of our special speakers at CPAC that'll be talking about possible reasons for the loss of this knowledge and trying to offer some new physics to explain it. So we'll talk a little bit about that conference when we get back. We have to take a break here. You are listening to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with Jeff Pitino and our special guest today, Graham Hancock. We'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
If you are interested in the topics discussed on today's show, you'll want to see Walter Cruttenden's award-winning film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. Why do civilizations fall and rise again? What did the ancients say about the cycle of the ages? The Great Year explores the possibility that the rise and fall of human culture might be related to our sun's motion around a companion star. Find out more about the celestial mechanics that bring higher ages of enlightenment and learn where we are today in this grand cycle of time. It's a message of hope and inspiration and answers many questions about the greatest enigmas of human history. Order the DVD today at thegreatyear.com. That's www.thegreatyear.com. www.thegreatyear.com.
ByRegion.net is the largest healing arts directory on the web. Our visitors are looking for holistic practitioners, schools, events, healing services, and products. Are you in healing arts? Become a member of ByRegion.net and get the best advertising values. You can increase your client base and your traffic. If you have a website, we can bring you more traffic. Want a website? Get a beautiful web display for only $4 a month. Become a member now. Mention HealthyLife.net and get 6 months free. Visit www.byregion.net or call 828-232-0016.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with Jeff Pitino, and we have author Graham Hancock with us today, author of Fingerprints of the Gods, Underworld, Supernatural, and he sold roughly 5 million copies. We're very pleased to have you with us, Graham.
Thank you.
So, Graham, I'd like to talk about your book Underworld, because I think it's just a fascinating book, and I know one of the criticisms about it was that it was almost too heavily researched.
Mm-hmm.
And what first inspired you to start looking under the oceans, and how did you go about researching that?
I felt it was very important after I had written Fingerprints of the Gods and after the really quite stunning reaction to that book around the world. First of all, the public reaction, and then secondly, a very bitter and twisted, angry reaction from academic archaeologists.
You touched some nerves.
Who seemed most annoyed because the book was popular. If the book hadn't been popular, it wouldn't have aroused their attention, but it was. And they seemed to feel a sort of professional obligation to put it down, to just dismiss it completely. And so I felt that a follow-up book was needed, which would tackle some of their points. And one of the issues that the archaeologists kept on attacking Fingerprints about was, no, there was never any global cataclysm that could have caused the whole civilization to disappear. And what I've tried to show in Underworld, let's set aside the issue of what actually caused the cataclysm, and there may be a number of different explanations that would work for that. But we cannot deny that a cataclysm did occur at the end of the Ice Age, and the evidence for that is based entirely in mainstream science. So I felt it was very important to set out that hard evidence in great detail of what actually happened to the Earth, what all scientists agree happened to, except apparently archaeologists, agree happened to the Earth at the end of the last Ice Age. And we are dealing with a 400-foot rise in sea level. We are dealing with 10 million square miles of land that was above water before and that is now submerged as a result of this cataclysm at the end of the Ice Age. We're dealing with gigantic volcanic eruptions and earthquakes all around the world as the ice sheets melted down and lifted their burden off the land masses. Truly a global cataclysm by any standards. And the most tangible aspect of this are those 10 million square miles of land, roughly equivalent to the size of Europe and China added together, that were swallowed up by the sea at the end of the Ice Age. So I decided the way to really take this inquiry further is not only to set out the facts, the undeniable facts, but also to go diving in those areas that were flooded at the end of the Ice Age. And so Samantha, my wife, who's a photographer, and I learned to scuba dive specifically for this purpose back in 1996, and we spent the next 5 years traveling around the world following quite a specific research strategy. We worked with a leading geologist from the University of Durham in the north of England, Dr. Glenn Milne, and he and his colleagues have developed the most cutting-edge computer program which models the changes of sea level at the end of the last ice age. So he could show me exactly what land was submerged and what land wasn't. Secondly, I would use myths, the myths of floods that are found all over the world.
How many are there? There's
well, just... you're dealing, actually, I believe, with thousands of such myths. It's just astonishing. There's hardly any culture, except some in Central Africa, that don't have a memory of the flood. This is the extraordinary thing. And many of them cast it at exactly the time Plato did, which is back at the end of the last ice age. It's really quite astonishing. So where we had myths that spoke of a great flood that had swallowed up some wonderful city from the remote past, where we had geology which showed that indeed a large amount of land had been submerged by the sea in that area, and crucially, where local fishermen or divers had things to say about seeing strange objects or structures on the bottom of the sea, in those areas we would go diving. And Santa and I believe, put in close to 2,000 dives all around the world, and we did find astonishing megalithic structures underwater off the coast of Japan, off the coast of Southeast India, off the coast of Northwest India, in the Mediterranean and across the Atlantic around Bimini as well.
Yes. You know,
for me, it was very much a matter. I've always felt, as a journalist, as a reporter, that it isn't enough to comment on these issues just in a stand back academic manner. I felt it was very important to get involved, and in this case, literally get my feet wet. Underworld contains a huge amount of information that resulted from our own direct field research, which in this case was diving. The book is heavy. It is packed with information, and the reason for that is I didn't want to leave the academics leeway and room to attack this book and falsely present a false impression about it. I wanted the book to answer every argument that could be raised against it, and for that reason, the book is indeed a long book.
But it reads well, you know. It's your classic style, where you're building to this conclusion, and by the end of that book, you just this image of this vast world culture becomes very clear. You know, the map work is excellent.
Yes, I greatly extended the work that I'd done on maps in Fingerprints of the Gods in that book. And again, when you do that with the computer program that gives you the accurate results of sea level rise, it's very intriguing. For example, there's a little island. If you go back to maps of the 15th and 16th century, you'll find that many of them show off the coast of Ireland a little island, a little almost circular island called High Brazil. But such an island doesn't exist today, and it didn't exist in the 14th and 15th centuries. But if you go back to about 12,000 years ago and you look at the effects of changed much lower sea level at that time, you find that an island does emerge in exactly that place, and it's impossible to resist the notion that those mapmakers were working from a source that had actually seen that island and depicted it on a map more than 12,000 years ago.
Yeah, that is amazing. Enough so that I guess there were several expeditions to go look for the island.
That's absolutely right. They were sending out expeditions from Bristol, which is actually quite near where I live now. I live in Barton, in the southwest of England, and Bristol's just 12 minutes away by train. And yeah, there were several seafaring expeditions went out to find High Brazil. They were so convinced it was there because it was on all their maps. It was just that they were 12,000 years too late.
That's fascinating. We have to take another break. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host, Walter Cruttenden, and we will be right back.
If you are interested in the topics discussed on today's show, you'll want to see Walter Cruttenden's award-winning film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. Why do civilizations fall and rise again? What did the ancients say about the cycle of the ages? The Great Year explores the possibility that the rise and fall of human culture might be related to our sun's motion around a companion star. Find out more about the celestial mechanics that bring higher ages of enlightenment and learn where we are today in this grand cycle of time. It's a message of hope and inspiration and answers many questions about the greatest enigmas of human history. Order the DVD today at thegreatyear.com. That's www.thegreatyear.com. www.thegreatyear.com.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
In college, I took a lot of history and liberal arts classes, and frankly, I don't remember much of any of it. But as an adult, I find myself engrossed in fascinating programs on the A&E and History Channel. They've pretty much helped me to be pretty impressive at social functions, and I just found out today that I can purchase DVDs of my favorite A&E and History Channel programs right through HealthyLife.net. You should visit HealthyLife.net and order your favorite A&E and History Channel program DVDs as well, and then discover how many people you can impress during your next social occasion.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with Jeff Pitino and our special guest today, Graham Hancock. Graham, we've been talking about ancient civilizations around the world and evidence. I find something that's most fascinating about your work is that you put together these multiple disciplines. When you talk to geologists, map makers, you study mythology, talk to locals. This is the type of work I think it takes to get a true picture versus, you know, in one vertical field. And yet, as you had mentioned, you know, some of the traditional archaeologists really recoil against the type of work you're doing. And I'm wondering if you're seeing any change there at all yet.
I think, unfortunately, in the world of archaeology, that change is going to be very hard to come. I do see some signs of it with the newer and younger professors in the discipline, a recognition that actually archaeology doesn't possess the truth. What it possesses is an interpretation of the facts. I do find some younger archaeologists are beginning to look at it that way, but the vast majority, those who really control the profession, are not prepared to look at it that way because they are so heavily invested in the linear notion of history and in the idea that there could be no possibility of an earlier high civilization.
I must say I see the same thing where some of the old guys that, you know, they've published papers, they've published books, and for them to kind of acknowledge some of the new evidence and put all the pieces together goes against their own earlier work, whereas some
it,
of the...
It does, and unfortunately, this very rigid and often prejudiced attitude to new ideas that we find amongst archaeologists does filter through into the media as well, and effectively acts as a kind of censorship on what the media are able to disseminate to the general public. So although it's the case that the public are much more imaginative and much more open to new ideas than the archaeologists are, the weight and influence of archaeological opinion on decision makers at the program level tends to result in the media not picking these stories up, and if they do, they tend to pick them up in a very sensationalist and trivial way. We do not get serious treatment on national television programs these days, for example, of the possibility of a lost civilization, and the reason we don't do that is because the program makers go first to the archaeologists, and they say, no, this isn't possible, and therefore the program doesn't get made. And it's really quite hard to break through that and to get a genuinely open discourse where all points of view are considered rather than just the point of view of the archaeological elite.
I agree. The media, the industry seems to be lagging what's going on the internet and you know,
very much so.
And the conference we did last year, people are quite intelligent. They'll ask the right questions. They can separate, for the most part, what's real and what's not.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. This is what's so really so unnecessary about the archaeologists. You know, they feel that that the public are not able to make up their own minds on issues, and because they're so sure they're right, they don't think that the public should even hear other points of view.
Well,
but of course the public can make up their own minds. We are dealing with highly intelligent, curious people who are curious about the past and want to be given the opportunity to make up their own minds on the basis of a broad range of information rather than a very narrow range.
Well, you know, you've been a pioneer out there, so you've taken a few arrows.
I have taken a few arrows. You're quite right about that. I definitely have, and I have to confess, they hurt.
I hear you loud and clear, but I kind of sense that things are changing, and I get this from just being on the internet a lot, and
yes,
you know, especially your own site, where I don't know how many different subjects are going at any one time, but.
Yeah, I find it really encouraging, and I feel very good about it, that we have a very large international community of people who've come together to discuss seriously, you know, precisely the issues that we're talking about now. And you can see that intelligence and you can see that curiosity coming out all the time. And very often I find new and interesting leads from things that people do post on my website, so. It's a positive process.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And, of course, we're going to have a little microcosm of what goes on your website at the University of California, Irvine, this fall, October 13th, 14th, and 15th, when we have CPAC, the Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge.
That's right. I'm really looking forward to that.
Good. Well, it'll be great to have you out again.
It was excellent last year. It was very stimulating to get together with like-minded investigators in this field and to really talk things through in an open and inquiring way.
Yeah, and that's one of the major goals of the conference, just to present the points of view and create that dialogue between both mainstream academics and people more on the forefront.
I hope you'll continue to build and develop this very important conference, and that it will become a node for discussion and inquiry into these areas.
Good. Well, this year we expect about 400 people, and in addition to yourself and Robert Schock, of course, John West is joining us. John Major Jenkins will be there again, and some of the new folks, though, Jeff Marcy. He's head of astronomy for UC Berkeley, probably the number one astronomer in the world because he's found more of these extrasolar planets than anybody else. And he's not afraid to go out on a limb here and there.
Excellent.
So he'll have some good points of view, as will Claude Swanson, just a great physicist, and a couple other guys.
No, I think it's going to be brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. Very quick, we've talked mostly about... ancient technology, but we've got about 60 seconds. Can you just tell us a little bit about Supernatural, your latest book?
Supernatural, it's my new book. It's looking into the mysterious origins of religion. Is it possible that the experiences people have in altered states of consciousness, in trance states, may be genuine insights into other dimensions? Is it possible that the spirit world is real? I'm looking into this in depth in Supernatural, and it's published in the U.S. this fall. In fact, so probably in September or October.
Oh, good. Well, when you're out here in California, we'll try to throw in a book signing with it too. Then
that would be wonderful.
Good. Well, Graham, it's just been a delight to have you on the show here, and we're very, very thankful that you could give us some of your time.
Thank you very much indeed, Walter. Nice to talk to you both. Nice to talk to you, Jeff, and see you guys in October.
Thank you, Graham.
And you are listening to Cosmic Influence, Walter Crutton and Jeff Pitino, and our special guest today, Graham Hancock.